Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Good. I thought my stuff was there, but a lot of 2-0 counts. I don't know, I just didn't feel too comfortable first few innings, but kind of did some drills, like some towel drills in the dugout, just kind of loosened up a little bit more and finally started finding the bottom of the zone. A lot of hard contact today, but defense did great. He didn't miss it and hit it out and tied the game, but this offense was great. They had my back, and I'm glad they got 2 runs back. A win's a win, and doesn't matter how you get it.
Especially early, obviously, we had all the guys on. A couple guys at third, less than 2 outs. We weren't able to get him in. He threw the ball so well, and he was outstanding again. It was tough when he pitches so well and he gets the ground balls that you'd like to see. He's become consistently, you know, he's healthy. He's getting stronger, confident, and the way he's throwing the ball is absolutely outstanding. There's just no doubt. When he goes out there, you really want to win those games because you know that you're going to be in it.
So they're in the process of trying to narrow down exactly what's been causing his symptoms. So he is back at the clinic getting some additional tests with the hope that they can better determine what's been causing him to have episodes of not feeling so great.
Talking about this the other day, when you think forward to Miami and think about all the Cleveland Indians that will be there and representing the organization, it's, you know, such a great pride organizationally for us because our entire coaching staff will be there, at least 5, maybe more players, depending upon how things play out over the next few days, representing us. I think that's a sign that, you know, there are a lot of good things going on within the team and within the organization and really a collective effort to get there.
There are rival teams out there that want this Golden State team to be dismantled. And so 2 years from now, when Klay Thompson, like Draymond Green, when they hit free agency, how can they even think about going somewhere else, taking more money, when a guy who's only been with the team for 1 year is taking almost $10 million less? I think what it shows is that this group of guys, they're really genuine about trying to make sure this thing is everlasting, at least for the foreseeable future.
They've got to do a little bit of roster shaping just to get Gordon Hayward in. To renounce Kelly Olynyk. They're going to have to move another core member here of their team, whether that's Jay Crowder or Avery Bradley. So there's some pain points here in just getting Gordon Hayward into the building. The one thing I wonder from here, even without the ability to have a lot of money to spend, there's going to be guys out there that look at the Eastern Conference and say, hey, you know, Paul George just bolted for the West or got traded to the West. Jimmy Butler just got moved to the West. The East is really wide open. You know, Boston and Cleveland are kind of the two obvious teams at the top, and there's teams like Toronto and Washington down below that could be in the mix as well. But the door is really open here for the Celtics, especially after winning 53 games, being the top seed last year.
They have a team here now with tremendous flexibility, versatility. As much as anything, they've got a player now in Gordon Hayward who can go get baskets in the fourth quarter. There was so much pressure on Isaiah Thomas to have to score the ball in big moments.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Right now, indeed. Where'd the music go? Show me music. I wanted to talk about it.
There it is. Thank you, Daniel.
Yeah, right now. You know what right now is? Right now is when the Boston Celtics are not a contender for the Eastern Conference Championship. That's what right now is. Right now, Gordon Hayward did not change the balance of power in the National Basketball Association. You know what else is not right now? Not right now. Jay Crowder and or Marcus Smart will be members of the Boston Celtics for very long. Right now, are you kidding me? Wow. You know what else is not right now? Right now, Steph Curry is not worth $400 million a year, or a $400 million contract at $80 million a year, the way one LeBron King James has suggested that he is. That's not what's right now. Welcome to the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, we are Toledo Sports Leader. So glad to have you aboard. You can open up the phone lines at 866-240-1065. By the way, congratulations to the NBA for managing to continue to capture our attention in this, their off season. I mean, obviously, they really strung it together. the NBA Finals, go right into the NBA Draft in a week. From the NBA Draft, they go into the NBA's award ceremony. The NBA award ceremony ends. They're already in the trade realm. Trading is going on, and then suddenly free agency starts, and now free agency is going, and the money is just flying here, there, and everywhere. And they managed to stay in the spotlight. So congratulations, seriously, to the NBA for figuring that part of this out. I'm not a massive fan of it, to be honest with you. You know what I feel like this is? You know, because what should we be talking about right now? This is Wednesday, the 5th of July. Hopefully you enjoyed your Independence Day yesterday. This is the 5th of July, and we're less than a week now because it's Tuesday the 11th. From the baseball All-Star game. We should be talking about the pennant races and where they are at the break. We should be talking about the All-Stars. Congratulations, the Cleveland Indians tied for the most All-Stars in the American League. 5 members of the first-place Indians will be in the All-Star game. 1 starter in Jose Ramirez. Backups, Michael Brantley and Francisco Lindor, who surprisingly made it, by the way. I thought Lindor really kind of plummeted in terms of his batting average toward about mid-May on, really has not been the same. He had a great start. But anyway, they're on it, as well as the pitchers, Corey Kluber and Andrew Miller, clearly two of the very, very deserving Indians. And then, of course, Terry Francona will be the manager. We'll talk about Terry Francona's health in a bit. But we should be talking about all this baseball stuff. Is Justin Verlander on the trading block? Are the Tigers asking too much for him? Because I saw a really interesting story today that said Verlander available, but Tigers want a boatload in return, despite the fact that Verlander's having a pretty down year with a 4.96 ERA. We should be talking about all of that. And instead, we lead with basketball. In the NBA, they're taking up our time. They are really commanding and competing for our attention. So congratulations to them. It is working as far as trying to become a 12-month sport. And that's where I started to go with this. It reminds me, in some ways, of the shift in youth sports away from being a three-sport athlete. Now, when I was growing up and playing in high school in the 1980s, if you were an ultra-talented kid, you could play football, basketball, baseball, just to pick three. Now, if you play a different sport, don't take umbrage at that. If you were a tennis player, if you were a female, too. You know, if you were a volleyball player, if you were blah, 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 a rower, soccer, whatever. But typically the big three, you know what we are. We're talking about football, baseball, and basketball. But when I was growing up, that's what it was. I mean, baseball started in the spring. And you got rolling sometime around April. And by the time the weather got good enough to really play every day, you know, your baseball season ran into May and into June. And if you were in All-Stars, maybe into July. And then come July and August, it was football time, baby, and you put the glove and the bat away. And you went to the gym, and you lifted, and you got on the field, and you caught passes, and you ran, and you hit, and you did the stairs, and all of that stuff. And you did that all the way up until around November, maybe even early December, depending on how far you went. And then when you put the basketball down, it was down for good. Or, excuse me, the football down. It was down for good, and you picked up the basketball. And it's basketball time, baby. I'm not going to batting practice. I'm not going to indoor pitchers and catchers practice. And I'm not going to the hands and quarterback camp. It's basketball season. And you're balling. And that's it. And you'll do that until around maybe February, maybe into March. And then maybe you'll get a month. Maybe you get 2 weeks off before it's baseball time again. And that's how we grew up. It was a season-by-season thing. But then what happened eventually? It morphed into, in the last 25 years, I think, maybe a little less, it depends on your perspective, I suppose. But it morphed into a thing where you can't be a multi-sport athlete except for very rare occasions. Why? Because the basketball coach damn well expects you, when you are in the off season, to be playing AAU ball after your school season. Instead of going to baseball starting in March or April, you went to AAU, and you played that into June. And maybe even into July. And then there are shooting camps, ball handling camps, team camps, etc. You don't play in those off seasons in the spring and summer to get ready for your winter basketball season. You get left behind, and the coaches told you that. So you didn't get to play your other sports. Meanwhile, of course, the baseball coach is like, you really think you're going to make this team next year without all of these extra BP sessions that we've got going on in the fall? First of all, you got to play fall ball. After your summer season, you got to play fall ball, play a full season there. Then in the wintertime, you damn well better be in the cage, and you better be at all of our indoor practice facility stuff, where we're taking grounders and we're working on mechanics and fundamentals, and we're doing bunting practice, and we're doing swinging at beach balls off the tee, and all of these different things to refine our swings. You better be doing this 12 months of the year, or you can't make the team. Really, only football resisted that somewhat. But even so, a lot of football coaches now kind of make their players, once the season ends in late October, November, maybe if you play into late November, early December, if you go to the state finals or something like that, maybe, just maybe. But then you get to, lifting starts in a couple of weeks. And then we're going to get some light running in on the track. Then we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And, oh, by the way, there is hands camp. There is hands camp. Then now there's 7-on-7s we can be doing during the summer. Instead of baseball, there's 7-on-7 camps. Each high school is allowed to have a certain number of 7-on-7 scrimmages organized with their coaches, with other teams, etc. Bottom line is, every sport tried to dominate all 12 months of the year in order to keep you out of the other sports. That's what it feels like from a fan perspective the NBA, the NFL, and Major League Baseball are doing. Baseball is probably the worst at it. Baseball just cannot keep your attention over the winter. They just don't have that in it. But the NFL has done such a great job of being a 12-month sport, because you start with training camps in July, and you've got the preseason in August as everybody ramps up, and then you start playing in September, and they own the calendar. October, November, December, and January up to the Super Bowl in February, including college football to some extent too, but we're just talking about the NFL now. And they time everything up so perfectly after the season with their draft and with their free agency period. And their mini camps and organized team activities, et cetera, et cetera. They have found a way to dominate the clock and the calendar, and the NBA is now following that blueprint to the letter. And they have really, really said, you don't have time to be watching baseball. You got to watch us. Look, Gordon Hayward went here. Paul George went there. Chris Paul went there. Kevin Durant took less to stay there. And Otto Porter, an average 13-point-a-game scorer, got a max contract to go there. Holy cow. And they got us watching it all. You don't have time to watch baseball. You certainly don't have time to pay attention to football yet. You're just competing, just like your coaches did for your time. And it's really something I'm not a fan of. But be that as it may, I'm a slave to it. If I'm in sports talk, or if I'm a writer, a journalist, or a blogger, we're kind of a slave to it. It's going on, so it's in the news, and it's where we are. I'm interested in your thoughts on that. Do you like the 12-month-a-year sort of calendar competition, the calendar domination by some sports, to the point where you can't just go from one sport to the next the way you used to be able to do? And again, like we did when we were younger players. 866-240-1065. You got a thought on it, weigh in on it right now. 866-240-1065. We're going to talk to Dennis Manilov about these NBA moves, also about the All-Stars in the American and National League, the five Indians who are on that All-Star team, very, very impressive. I thought they might get three. They got five. The Astros also got five, clearly the most complete team in baseball. Terry Francona's having health issues. He's being examined even as we speak. So we'll get into all of that with Manilov coming up. But I'm waiting for your phone calls and ready for your phone calls. I should say at 866-240-1065 when you want to make them. But to the point, since we are a slave to the calendar and the way that they're running things now, how about Gordon Hayward? Headline on SportsIllustrated.com today. This came into my inbox because I'm a subscriber to pretty much all of the publications. Whenever they get breaking news, I allow the push notifications on my phone, and you get these kinds of things. And here's one that was pushed across my screen about 3 hours ago. Gordon Hayward will make... hold on, let me quote it for you. Where'd that headline go? Because that's not the headline of the article. The headline on my screen that came across was, here it is, Gordon Hayward alters the NBA title race. Then the sub-headline, Gordon Hayward will help Boston pose a realistic challenge in the East. And it's so weird how they do this, by the way. These sports sites, the subject line when they send you the alert, Gordon Hayward alters NBA title race. You open it, Gordon Hayward will help Boston pose a realistic challenge in the East. You click it and go to the story, and it's, Gordon Hayward will make for a seamless Celtic. It's like they change it and dumb it down and weaken it just a little bit every step of the click process. And it's called clickbait, and I can't stand them for it, but it is what it is. So I want to address the alert that said Gordon Hayward alters NBA title race. On what planet do you think Gordon Hayward becoming a Celtic, going from the Jazz to the Celtics, alters the NBA title race? Do the Celtics somehow now pose a threat to the Golden State Warriors? The Golden State Warriors, who found a way to re-sign Andre Iguodala, their key sixth man, that found a way to bring in Swaggy P. Nick Young, that finds a way to stay as good, if not better, than they were the year before on a pretty regular basis now because of the unselfishness of some of their stars, not the least of which, of course, is NBA Finals MVP Kevin Durant, who made it official and is taking less money than the max, less money, in order to help the team keep its core and its ancillary pieces together, which is pretty... Is Gordon Hayward affecting that Warriors roster right now? Kind of thinking not. Does anybody think that Gordon Hayward being on the Celtics somehow changes the dynamics of the Eastern Conference? Did you watch the conference finals? Did you watch Cleveland beat the living dog blank out of the Celtics in five games, outscoring them by a combined 100 points in the wins? Does anybody think that Gordon Hayward being inserted into that same Boston lineup against the same Cavaliers team, and that's, again, assuming there are no changes to the Cavaliers, and it looks like there won't be, this Carmelo Anthony situation is not going to happen. In my opinion, it should not happen. They would be a worse team if Carmelo Anthony was substituted into the lineup for Kevin Love. It would not be a better team. It would be worse for the Cavaliers. So that's not going to happen. So if the Cavaliers stay as is, team went to the finals for each of the last 3 years, and the Celtics add Gordon Hayward, let's just keep the Celtics the same as they were a year ago. Does Gordon Hayward take the Cleveland Cavaliers from 4-1 winners over the Celtics to a place where they lose the series to the Celtics? And if you say no, but maybe it's 4-2 now, okay, does that alter the NBA's title race? No, kind of thinking it doesn't. And now consider the fact that the Celtics very likely are not going to be as is plus Gordon Hayward. That Hayward is going to, his acquisition at 4 years and $128 million. Gordon Hayward's acquisition is going to require the Celtics to move Jay Crowder and or Marcus Smart because of the luxury tax situation. Does anybody really think that Boston is suddenly now some contender for the NBA title, let alone to beat the Cavaliers in the Eastern Conference? Sports Illustrated says, and I quote, "Boston would still be in relatively good shape no matter what happened this summer, but actually landing Hayward on a reported 4-year, $128 million deal changes the contextual meaning of everything the Celtics have in store. Isaiah Thomas and Al Horford will be even better players when they have a do-it-all wing like Hayward to bridge them. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, who, by the way, could be a very good player someday, who's 19 and a rookie in a year in a league in which rookies, quite frankly, don't mean that much. There's just not room for them to excel unless they're exceptional once-in-a-generation players like LeBron did in 2003 when he came in and scored 25 a game. Even Kawhi Leonard, one of the best players in the world right now, one of the top five best players in the world, was a 4 or 5 6-point-a-game scorer his rookie year, so forget about that. But anyway, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, and any Boston lottery picks to come will benefit from a low-pressure developmental track. Even running second man on the Cavs means something entirely different when Hayward is involved. Why? How? They're not getting past the Cavs, and that's it. They're the same team they were before. At least for a year. Now, if and when LeBron James packs up shop and says, I'm out of here, I'm taking my talent someplace else, after 1 year, now we have a different discussion. But for now, to say the Celtics alter the NBA title race because of the acquisition of Gordon Hayward, have a bite of reality. I mean, seriously. It is not even an issue. It is not even close. So we'll talk a little bit about that deal, and we'll talk about what that means with Dennis Mandeloff coming in here in a few minutes. And we're also going to talk about the money. The money that is flying around. The money in an NBA culture in which Otto Porter, who is essentially an underachieving bust for the first 2 years of his career, is suddenly a max player. Wait, what? Yeah. Remember, we're 1 year removed from Timofey Mozgov being a $60-plus million player. Gordon Hayward, who's a nice player, a really good player, who is not a max player, is getting 4 years at 128 mil. Help me with my math. Would 4 years at $30 million a year be 120 million? I think it would. So this is $30-plus million a year for Gordon bleeping Hayward. Not LeBron bleeping James or Kevin bleeping Durant or James bleeping Harden or Kawhi bleeping Leonard. It's Gordon bleeping Hayward. $30-plus million a year? Something is wrong. Something is amiss. Something needs to be corrected. And I feel like LeBron James, who is pushing and pushing for more because of how much money the NBA owners are making, well, they're the ones who are going to find themselves in very, very short order in a very, very small minority. Because I do not believe that this is something that can last. This is a bubble. Does anybody remember the dot-com bubble of the turn of the century back in 2000? 99, 2000, 2001, all of these companies, dot-com companies, with technology exploding in Silicon Valley, just their worth in being inflated. They're selling advertising hand over fist, and they're just making so much money, not having any idea how to sustain it. And pretty soon that bubble burst boom, in late 2001, and how many of those companies went belly up? They got fat and happy and spent like drunken sailors because they thought the money would come in forever. It didn't. It couldn't. And that's what's going to happen here to the NBA. It's going to explode. And a very, very small few are going to be all the ones that have anything left. All right. We're going to get into that. We're going to get into the baseball story, the All-Star story that I mentioned as well. Going to take a time out here. And you know what I do want to do since we have the opportunity to take this time out is give you something cool. We do have a couple of prizes that we're giving away today, including four pack of passes, four pack of all access, any day, all grounds passes to the Marathon Classic. Four pack of any day ground passes to Highland Meadows for July 17th to the 23rd as the Marathon Classic returns. I will give that four pack to you if you are caller number, let's shoot for six, caller six. Dial 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065, and that prize is yours. Mandeloff joins us next to talk NBA and more right here on The Extravaganza.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 1065 The Ticket.
Thanks for joining us, 866-240-1065. We'll get you on the radio as quickly as we can, but right now we want to get on the radio our friend Dennis Mandeloff. A little reaction to all of the news in the NBA free agency period. We got a baseball all-star game less than a week away. Five players from his hometown Indians will be there. One Tiger, of course, Michael Fulmer as well. And joining us with reaction is our good friend Dennis Mandeloff. He is a sports writer for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Joins us here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket in Toledo. D-Man, what's going on? How are you?
What's up, Bob Friend?
Good to talk to you, my friend. All right, so much. You know, I was just commenting, Dennis, about how the NBA has done such a good job of following the NFL's lead in really trying to dominate the calendar, as many of the 12 months of the calendar as they possibly can. I mean, they went from an extraordinarily long and really relatively boring, to be quite frank, playoff season, right into the NBA Finals, right into the NBA Draft, right into the NBA Awards Ceremony, right into the NBA Trading Season, right into the NBA Free Agency, and we haven't stopped talking about them, you know, really for 8 or 9 months now. And I kind of compared it to how, you know, youth sports used to go right from baseball to football to basketball, et cetera, and each season had its own until coaches made you play year-round in one sport if you didn't want to be left behind. You couldn't, you had to specialize. It almost feels like that the professional sports are competing for our attention more now than ever before, and we have to pay attention to one sport, you know, for far longer than their actual season lasts.
I totally agree with you, and, you know, I would say the NBA has taken a page from the NFL. I'm sure the NBA would disagree. They'd say they set the template, but here's the thing about the NBA. They've got a PhD in conning the public because 90% of their teams have no chance of winning a championship, okay, and 80% of them have no chance of making the NBA final. So how do they peddle that product year over year when there's such little parity? Mm-hmm. Well, they create soap opera dramas around individuals. Where are the individuals going to go? I mean, think about LeBron. We're talking about where is LeBron going to play in this, you know, where is he going to go in the summer of 2018? Haven't even played 17-18 yet, okay? I mean, you know, even with the Golden State guaranteed almost to win another title in many people's eyes, it doesn't stop the talk about, well, Chris Paul's going here, you know, Paul George was traded to Oak City, or, you know, or San Antonio's got this or whatever. Even though those same people are granting that Golden State's going to win, yet all we talk about is the individuals and what they're doing in the NBA. And it's a masterstroke by the association because it covers up the dirty little not-so-secret about that association, which is there's virtually no parity.
I think that's very well said. There is none, and your 90%, 80% statistic or estimation is probably accurate in terms of chances to win. But, yeah, I get this push notification come across my screen, my phone screen today from Sports Illustrated that says, Gordon Hayward alters NBA title race. Wait, what? Gordon Hayward, who is not the last time I checked LeBron James, nor Kevin Durant, nor Kawhi Leonard, nor Russell Westbrook, nor James Harden, nor Anthony Davis, nor one of the top 10 players in the NBA, going from Utah to a team that lost 4-1 in the Eastern Conference Finals to the Cavaliers, which are going to return largely intact. And in the process, this Boston team that lost 4-1 to this Cavaliers team that is going to return intact is probably going to have to, due to salary cap reasons, part with Marcus Smart or Jay Crowder in order to bring Hayward in. And this alters the NBA title race? In what world and in what dream of Sports Illustrated as they try to concoct, you know, storylines that fly in the face of what you just pointed out, that there is no parity, that nobody really has a shot at this thing other than one or two teams?
Well, no, you're exactly right, Bob. And yet the media keeps, we in the media, we're all in the media. I'm not going to, you know, step away from it. But,
yeah, I got you.
You know, we peddle this stuff and people buy it and people listen to it and they buy into it. I mean, Gordon Hayward, insignificant piece, really. Do you honestly think that even if the Celtics get past the Cavaliers and win the East, do you think they're going to beat the best of the West? No. Okay. So, and that won't happen anytime soon.
Although I would say this, though, Dennis, hold on a second. If you even go that far, though, then now you may have proven Sports Illustrated correct. Because if they got past the Cavaliers, they would be altering the NBA's title race. Because we kind of all expect it should be Cleveland and Golden State again. I don't even think they have a chance at that.
Yeah, you make a solid point. You're right. If they did get past the Cavs, then they would be validating what is said about Hayward. But listen, I mean, the idea that Hayward's going to transform the Celtics, especially if the Celtics still have Isaiah Thomas, who's a ball dominant guard and who is, you know, shorter than 6 feet. So he's got disadvantages right out of the jump.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're going to have to figure out how to play. Okay, fine. Great. The Celtics are a nice little rival for the Cavs. And I think you make another good point here. We in Cleveland and nationally as well lose sight of the fact the Cavs are a very good team. All right. Just because they got beat by a historically great team in the NBA Finals in 5 games doesn't automatically mean that they're dogs, okay? And if the Cavaliers bring back everybody, which it appears they're going to do, or close to everybody, other than the peripheries on the bench, they're still going to be good. So, you know, you can't bury them, but But again, you get back to this whole idea of talking up players for the sake of storylines. I mean, think of Blake Griffin. Okay, well, all this talk about Blake Griffin. Oh, Blake Griffin, you know, he's going to the LA Clippers. What are the Clippers going to do? I mean, he's staying with the Clippers. Right. What are they going to do in the Western Conference landscape? Nothing. They're not going anywhere while Blake Griffin is there, the great Blake Griffin. Utah, now that Hayward's gone, you know, good luck for the next however many years trying to compete. The Cavaliers, if they, you know, if and when they lose LeBron again, good luck with for another decade trying to, you know, compete. That's where I think the NBA knows that it has a parity problem, and it does everything it can to gloss over it, and so far so good, because the money's coming in, the TV ratings are good for the, you know, for the playoffs at the very least, and advertisers love it. It's a younger generation demo, so all's well in the world of the NBA, never mind that so many teams take the court to start a season and have no chance.
That is exactly right. Dennis Manilef is our guest. D-Man is analyzing the NBA's trading season, the free agency period now with all kinds of money flying around. I want to talk about the money. Well, actually, a couple more moves just from a basketball perspective, and then I want to talk about the ridiculous salaries that are being thrown around here, because it is truly getting out of hand, unless, of course, you're LeBron James, in which you say, boy, we're really underpaid. But let's talk about the actual moves. Paul George to Oklahoma City was a surprise to a lot of people. A, did Indiana get enough back for Paul George, considering some of the places where he possibly could have gone had they been a little bit more patient? And B, what are the odds that it works, even for a year, with Paul George and Russell Westbrook? Do you see those two being able to play together where both guys are happy? And the reason I ask that, of course, is because there's a reason why Kevin Durant is in Golden State right now and wearing a championship ring. And it's not just because he was chasing the ring. He hated playing with Russell Westbrook. I feel like Paul George will hate playing with Russell Westbrook as well. And Russell Westbrook, once he realizes he actually has to pass the ball maybe more than twice in the fourth quarter, is going to hate playing with another star. I think he was happy as a lark in Oklahoma City this year all by himself. And now here comes Paul George. How does that work?
Well, I'm sure that Westbrook will dial up the Dan Dockett script when he, late in the game, when he's considering passing the ball to Paul George, and be like, hey, Paul, how many game-winning shots have you ever hit in your career? Oh, that's right, none. So I'm taking it. But
although, of course, the problem with that is he did the same thing to Durant, who was a great player and a great clutch shooter and a great clutch scorer, and Russell still said, I'm taking it. It's one of the things that drove Durant away, and now George is no Durant, so you're right. Westbrook isn't going to change that much, and that's one of the reasons why the Paul George deal is going to be, in my opinion, clearly a one-year rental, and he's on his way to L.A. after a year of playing with Russell.
And, Bob, that's exactly why I think it's going to work, because George is going to say, you know what, I'll give it my all for a year, I'll buy in to Russell Westbrook's team. I'll play the good soldier, you know, the one A guy or the B guy, if you want to refer to, you know, me as V and Russell as the A. But I can deal with this for 1 year. No problem. I'll look good in everybody's light, and I'll just be a good, hardworking team player, and we'll see where this goes. But he knows that he's got the escape route. He's got the ability to, you know, jump out of the plane after 1 year, and that can give him a sense of, you know, peace, if you will, where if he were in the first year of a 5-year deal and all of a sudden he's dealing with a guy like Russell Westbrook, who isn't perhaps the easiest teammate to have, then it might be a lot harder. So I think it's going to work because George has the ability to escape after 1 year.
Will they be any kind of a factor in the West? And I don't mean.
But that's what I mean. Yeah.
Can they beat a Houston? Can they beat a San Antonio? Can they beat the Clippers and be the main rival to the Warriors if there is such a thing in the West?
Yeah, that's the caveat. When I say it'll work, how much is it going to work? Yeah. I don't think it'll work beyond being. They're certainly not better than the Warriors. They're not better than the Spurs when healthy. I mean, the Spurs, if you return them to health and you get them whole, they're better than Oak City. And then Houston is a very intriguing team, and we'll see how things play out with Paul and Harden. But I still, you know, and when I think about what Houston potentially could do with Chris Paul, I will give you Houston over Oak City with Westbrook and George. So at the very best, I would say their ceiling is the 4 seed in the West, assuming everybody stays healthy.
So you're saying their ceiling is the roof?
Yeah. There you go.
I had to. Yeah. As soon as you said the ceiling, I thought of MJ. Had to do that. Dennis Manilov joining us. Real quick on the conferences. Of the top 14 players in the National Basketball Association, I just saw the statistic today, one is in the Eastern Conference, and that, of course, is LeBron James. I mean, not all of the stars are out west. All of the best teams, except for the Cavaliers, are out west. And again, we'll see what Hayward does for the Celtics. I still don't think very much. It is so competitively imbalanced there. For those who suggest that LeBron would want to go over there into that meat grinder of superstardom and have to compete with all of those great players and teams just to get to the finals next year, I think clearly that idea takes a hit now, and LeBron certainly might want to stay in Cleveland so he can get back to the finals again and again and again. However, given the fact that LeBron James knows that many, rightly or wrongly, and I know how you feel about this, But rightly or wrongly, many are going to say each trip to the finals and being another loss drops him to 3-6, 3-7, 3-8, and is, you know, in the finals, et cetera, et cetera. That maybe that isn't something he wants to do. Maybe it's better to lose on the way up to it rather than get there and get drilled by the Western Conference champion. What do you make of this imbalance of the conferences? Is it good for the league? And I'm sure it isn't, but exactly maybe a better question is how bad is it for the league, and how does it change LeBron's thinking, if at all?
Well, again, it's not going to be bad for the league if they continue to peddle what they peddle, which is soap operas during, you know, the off season and then into the season. You know, and I was thinking of this, I forgot to mention it earlier. Think about Carmelo Anthony, Bob. How much print, talk, and television has been devoted to Carmelo Anthony's career, okay? What has he ever won? What has he ever won as an NBA player?
Nothing.
And yet, you could write books on how much coverage Carmelo Anthony has gotten. So that's a classic case, I think, of how the NBA is able to thrive, not just survive, but thrive when their team is, you know, when they have no balance with their competitors. But to your point about West versus East,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I guess it's cyclical. I mean, it's possible that of course it's possible. It'll happen someday if they keep the East and the West where the East gets good again. I mean, I didn't hear that many people howling back in the day when Jordan's Bulls, and the East was so dominant. And the West was just out there. I didn't hear anybody say, oh, the East, you know, what are we going to do? We got to meld both conferences and you have to have a one conference association. So it is cyclical.
But was it ever this bad? Dennis, was it ever this bad? I don't think it was. You know, where, I mean, you know, the East had Jordan and it had Isaiah and it had Bird and so on, but the West had, you know, Magic and the West had, Karl Malone and the West had, Hakeem Olajuwon. I mean, I've never seen it so star studded in one conference over the other the way it is right now. I think this is unprecedented. All of the power is in one conference.
Okay.
It's varsity and JV like it has never been before at least in my lifetime that I can recall.
Okay, well, all right, and then, you know, and you're a student of the game, and I hear you. I mean, it is there is a great imbalance. Is it going to affect the product this year? No, again, because the regular season is nothing but a six-month march to the playoffs, and that's all the NBA cares about is the playoffs.
Right.
That's where all the money is made and everything else. So I don't think it's going to bother the league. I don't think it's a long-term problem for the league. They're still going to have their storylines. Regarding LeBron, I mean, I will listen to the argument, and I will actually promulgate the argument that, or the position, mm-hmm. that if LeBron goes through this next season and loses in the finals, mm-hmm. or doesn't get there, God forbid, for Cleveland fans' sake,
right.
That he would be restless. And even though there is an obvious imbalance west to east, he would look at this situation after another loss in 18 and say, you know what? I think I want to try somewhere else. I would not say in the least, and not just because he would be 3-6 at this point in the finals. I just think that, yeah, he would get restless to the point where he would be like, I want to try something else, even if it is in the West. And there's, of course, the potential that he could put together his, you know, banana boat crew. You know, the guys like Wade. I mean, I don't know what Wade would have left, but certainly Paul and Anthony. You know, he could try to figure out a way to get his guys together to play with his crew. And, yes, he would want to win a title, but I think more importantly, perhaps, at that stage of his career would be, I want to play with the guys that I like. And, you know, I've always dreamed about playing with Carmelo and with Wade and with, you know, Paul and that combination. And I got to do it with Dwayne, but I never have played with Chris Paul, and I've never played with Anthony. So construct that setup and see what happens. Ride it out with no guarantees that you're going to be able to topple Golden State.
Yeah, well, there's no guarantees anyway, you're right, but I'm more of the mind, and this is all, of course, so ridiculously speculative. As you said, we in the media are playing the part of this game, too, looking at the 2018 summer rather than this summer, but we're going to watch and see what kind of a pro Lonzo Ball is for a year as a rookie point guard. We're going to see how the Lakers improve under Magic with Magic Johnson calling the shots, knowing that they're going to have the cap space next year to perhaps bring both a Paul George and a LeBron James, putting them together with some of the young talent like Brandon Ingram that they have there. They have acquired a big now in Lopez. You know, you look at a group like that. Could a George and a LeBron and a Lopez and an Ingram and a Lonzo Ball maybe be what it takes to ruffle some feathers out in Oakland? I can see something like that taking shape more than I can the Banana Boat Club right now, because that would almost be just assuredly for fun, because Dwayne Wade will have nothing left after this year. Yep. Carmelo Anthony, to me, already only has a jump shot left pretty much. That's all. He'll never defend. To me, I think LeBron would still, if he makes a move, it would be, again, to get a fourth ring. And I think something like I just described might be interesting, depending on how this year plays out, obviously. D-Man, I don't know if we're going to have time for the baseball, so let me go to the money. Otto Porter, in 2 years, is an 11-point-a-game and a 13-point-a-game score. He just got a max contract offer from the Knicks. Otto Porter, 4 years, $106 million. Chances are Washington will match that and he'll stay where he is. Otto freaking Porter. I just told you about Gordon Hayward. $30-plus million dollars a year, 4 years and $128 million for Gordon Hayward. Not for LeBron James, $30 million. Not for Kevin Durant, Gordon Hayward. J.J. Redick just got a $23 million a year deal, even though it's only a one-year deal. Steph Curry signed the richest contract in the history of the National Basketball Association. He's going to make $40 million a year. 5 years, $200 million. And the instantaneous response, D-Man, from LeBron James is he should get $400 million, not $200 million. He should make $80 million a year, and there's no reason we should have a salary cap. I just about fell over when I read that and heard that, and I just get a little bit shaky when I talk about this because it disgusts me so much, the idea that somebody should be making that kind of money. Where are you?
You know, Bob, I mean, this is where we would disagree. We have disagreed in the past because I'm a player's advocate, okay? I almost always take the side of the player over the owner. I side with the millionaire over the billionaire, and the bottom line is this. Even if we do disagree on that element of it, I don't think we can argue with this. If the money is there, then, well, I mean, you know, as long as the check's clear, what difference really does it make? I mean, we can sit here and cringe. We in a different pursuit or in different job and say, oh my gosh, this is outrageous. And look at all this money just for putting a basketball in a hoop. But guess what? If the money's available, and, I mean, these owners are not poor. They're scratching the checks to sign these guys. Then who are we to complain about it? You know what I mean? Well, that's how I
do. But the answer to that is we are the people who watch our ticket prices, which are already astronomical, and most of us can only afford to go to a game or two a year in our favorite city, watching our favorite team that plays 41 times, let alone buy a group ticket package because of these astronomical costs. We're the ones that have to pay the freight for all of them to have their 20th summer home in a different country. And for the billionaires, here's the real problem. Is not every billionaire is a billionaire, if you understand my meaning. There are some owners who can afford to go into that luxury tax and pay $40, $50 million over the cap. LeBron is saying get rid of the cap altogether. That's why he said Steph Curry should make $400 million, saying get rid of the cap altogether. If you think there's no parity now, D-Man, which, again, I can tell from our previous conversation you're opposed to, wait until only the three or four richest owners in the world can afford to pay $100 million a year for LeBron, $95 million a year for Durant, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And all of the talent, all of it, is in four cities rather than spaced out through maybe seven or eight now. I mean, my God in heaven, there's a reason why there is a salary cap, because we're looking for some sort of sporting challenge and competitive balance in the sport.
Yeah, and here's the thing. You know, and I know that the solution to rein in the salaries would be for the fans to be turned off and right. to say, enough.
Stop going.
I'm not going to pay X amount of dollars to go to a game. I'm not going to pay X amount of dollars for parking, concessions, da da da. More to the point, in the 21st century even, is I'm not going to pay to watch the game on cable or satellite. I'm not going to pay to buy the gear. I'm not going to pay to buy the NBA 2K or whatever else is out there.
Yep.
But guess what? That isn't happening, certainly in the case of the NBA. They're getting enough revenue to come in from enough fans who are willing to buy the gear, who are willing to pay the ticket prices, who are willing to watch it on TV at a cable rate or a satellite rate.
Right.
And as a result, because of that, the money is available to pay these guys. Now, one of these days, it might dry up. You know, and I mean, you see what's happened in certain major networks and cutbacks and stuff like that, because, and they're on the hook for these big TV deals. Someday it might dry up, but right now the money is there, so guys are being signed for big money.
Yeah, I hope that day is soon, because again, you know, it's one thing to reward excellence, and it's another thing to reward mediocrity, as if it is excellence. Timofey Mozgov making $64 million. Heck, Mike Conley Jr., who is never, ever, ever, ever listed whenever we talk about who the top 5 point guards in the NBA. Heck, the top 10 point guards in the NBA for at least one calendar year was the highest paid player in the league. Otto Porter, as I mentioned, getting a max deal. Max should be reserved for the very best of the best, not for a 12-point-a-game career average score going into his third year. It just doesn't make any sense. And the last thing, Dennis, and I know you said you vote for you'll always side with the players over the owners. What got LeBron going in making that comment was, of course, the fact that the owner of the Golden State Warriors bought the club for $450 million, and it's now worth over $2.5 billion. And he said, well, then how come you don't give Steph more of that? And you know what my answer to that is? When you put the money up, you can make that kind of profit. If you make the investment, you can get that return. If you want to make that kind of profit, buy your own gosh damn team. Because as a player, no. The owner runs the risk that if the money dries up, as you point out, D-Man, that he takes the loss. His company goes into the red. The player's money is guaranteed. The owners have no such guarantee, and that to me is the big difference between the two. I'll give you the last 30 seconds to wrap it.
Oh, I'm with you there. And I said most of the time I take the player's side. Your case that you just spelled out, I agree with you. But here's the thought I'll leave you with. Keep an eye on Gilbert's thought process going forward about whether he's going to retain the Cavaliers, because his value, the value of that franchise, is going to drop dramatically if LeBron leaves in 18. So Gilbert's got to make a calculation here. Do I want to keep this franchise, or do I want to sell high? And so I would just say keep an eye out for that possibility.
A very, very good point. Although, can you sell high? Because any buyer is going to say the same thing. I'm not assured LeBron's going to be there next year. What's the real value of this thing going to be a year from now? And any buyer is going to be very, very careful as well. Dennis Maniloff, thanks so much for the great analysis, my friend. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, bud.
Top of the hour Sports Center now. Back to your phone calls. We'll check in with Jim Cushlin out of York as well as we continue ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
I felt good. I thought my stuff was there, but a lot of 2-0 counts. I don't know, I just didn't feel too comfortable first few innings, but kind of did some drills, like some towel drills in the dugout. Just kind of loosened up a little bit more and finally started finding the bottom of the zone. A lot of hard contact today, but defense did great. He didn't miss it and hit it out and tied the game, but this offense was great. They had my back, and I'm glad they got two runs back. A win's a win, and doesn't matter how you get it.
Especially early, obviously. We had all the guys on, a couple guys in third, less than 2 hours. We weren't able to get him in. He threw the ball so well, without saying anything. It was so well. It's a round ball that you'd like to say. He becomes consistently, you know, he's healthy. He's getting stronger, confident, and the way he's throwing the ball is absolutely outstanding. There's just no doubt. When he goes out there, you really want to win those games because you know that you're going to be in it.
So they're in the process of trying to narrow down exactly what's been causing his symptoms. So he is back at the clinic getting some additional tests with the hope that they can better determine what's been causing him to have episodes of not feeling so great.
Talking about this the other day, when you think forward to Miami and think about all the Cleveland Indians that will be there and representing the organization, it's, you know, such a great pride organizationally for us because our entire coaching staff will be there, at least five, maybe more players, depending upon how things play out over the next few days, representing us. I think that's a sign that, you know, there are a lot of good things going on within the team and within the organization and really a collective effort to get there.
There are rival teams out there that want this Golden State team to be dismantled. And so 2 years from now, when Klay Thompson, the likes of Draymond Green, when they hit free agency, how can they even think about going somewhere else, taking more money, when a guy who's only been with the team for 1 year is taking almost $10 million less? I think what it shows is that this group of guys, they're really genuine about trying to make sure this thing is everlasting, at least for the foreseeable future.
They've got to do a little bit of roster shaping just to get Gordon Hayward in. They had to renounce Kelly Olynyk. They're going to have to move another core member here of their team, whether that's Jay Crowder or Avery Bradley. So there's some pain points here in just getting Gordon Hayward into the building. The one thing I wonder from here, even without the ability to have a lot of money to spend, there's going to be guys out there that look at the Eastern Conference and say, hey, you know, Paul George just bolted for the West or got traded to the West. Jimmy Butler just got moved to the West. The East is really wide open. You know, Boston and Cleveland are kind of the two obvious teams at the top, and there's teams like Toronto and Washington down below that could be in the mix as well. But the door is really open here for the Celtics, especially after winning 53 games, being the top seed last year.
They have a team here now with tremendous flexibility, versatility. As much as anything, they've got a player now in Gordon Hayward who can go get baskets in the fourth quarter. There was so much pressure on Isaiah Thomas to have to score the ball in big moments.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Four on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Hope you're having a great day. Really appreciated the exchange of ideas and opinions with Dennis Maniloff. Would love to exchange opinions and ideas with you, too. 866, remember the number, 240-1065. Are you okay with Otto Porter getting a 4-year, $106 million max contract offer? Are you okay with Gordon Hayward getting $30+ million a year? What's it going to come out to? About 32 almost? $32 million a year? Gordon Hayward. How many MVPs? None. How many world championships? No, none. How many All-NBA first, second, or third team appearances? None. $32 million a year? Are you okay with this? You know, I'm going back to what I was talking about with Maniloff. His response, LeBron's response, came in response to a tweet, as somebody pointed out, that Steph Curry, in getting his $201 million 5-year contract extension, which again makes his value at about $40 million a year. Somebody pointed out that Joe Lacob, the owner of of the Golden State Warriors, bought his franchise for $450 million, and now it is worth about $2.5 billion. And that's what prompted LeBron to say, so tell me again why there's a cap on how much a player should get. Don't answer that. Steph should be getting $400 million this summer for 5 years. Hashtag JMTS. And then it's in response again to Ann. Oh, that's who it was. It was Ann Killian. Beg your pardon. Ann Killian, who is a columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle, I should say. She's the one who wrote that in 2010, Lakewood bought the Warriors for $450, and now it's worth $2.6 billion. LeBron says, well, therefore, Steph should get $400 million. Number one, Steph didn't buy the team for $450 million. Lakeup did. Was Steph partly responsible for its growth in value to $2.6 billion? Absolutely. They won three championships. They went to three finals and won two championships. Curious. Exactly how many of those was Steph Curry the best player in? If you say none, you would be correct. Andre Iguodala won the MVP of the finals 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, technically now, three finals ago. And Kevin Durant, of course, won it this year. Second of all, even if Steph Curry happened to be the very best player on that team in either of those championship runs, or in that period of time since Laker bought the team, and the value went from $450 million to $2.6 billion, let me ask you this. What's Microsoft worth? What's Apple worth? Does the lead designer of the iPhone, does the lead designer of Microsoft Word, the chief programmer, the chief code writer, do they get to make $400 million a year because the company is worth a few billion? No. Their employees, and they're rewarded handsomely for their contributions. Of this, I have no doubt. But if you think there's any designer, programmer, app creator, iPhone maker who's making $400 million for the multi-billion dollar Apple Corporation or Microsoft Corporation, then you don't know anything about business. The owner makes the most money. The owner makes the profits. The CEO makes the most profits. The employees are just that. They'll be handsomely compensated, and if it's not handsome enough for them, they can take their talents elsewhere. That's what the NBA is, with free agency. But it's not unlimited, it's not uncapped, because there are only a couple of Microsofts and Apples in the world, aren't there? There's a Microsoft, there's an Apple, there's a Google, there's a Facebook, there's a Goldman Sachs. There's only a handful of those multi-billion dollar corporations where they're making money hand over fist, where individuals might be responsible for a large part of it, but who are not going to be making as much as the owners of those companies. And if they don't like it, if the lead programmer at Apple doesn't like how much he's getting, I'm sure he would be very happy to walk across the street to Microsoft and knock on the door there and say, hey, I'm available. I'm a free agent. How much will you give me to work here? There's nothing wrong with that, but they're never going to make that kind of money. And to suggest that because Lakeup made as big of a profit as he did from half a billion to $2.5 billion, that Curry deserves, a half of a billion himself in a contract is just absurd. There is such a thing as too much. Too much is too much. And we're there, Otto Porter, last year, Timofey Mozgov and Michael Conley. We're there, Gordon Hayward. We're there. With all of these guys signing these ridiculous deals because it's an arms race now. Everybody has to try to gather as many of their stars as they can and pay them as much as they're allowed to in order to try to compete with the Warriors, and they go over the top with it. And they give ordinary, NBA starters, and that's what Otto Porter is. He's an ordinary 13-point-a-game player. They're giving him LeBron James money. Guess what? It doesn't work in baseball. It will not work here. Ask Nick Swisher. No, ask the Indians about Nick Swisher. Ask, the New York Yankees about all of the guys that they have paid ridiculous hundreds of millions of dollars worth of contracts to, only to watch them wash out. They're guaranteed money. That's the other thing, as I said to Dennis. When Leka bought his team and made his investment, he didn't have a guaranteed return on that investment. What if the Warriors, who stunk for the longest time, continued to stink? What if that happened? He's the one that loses money, not the guaranteed contracts that the players get. Steph Curry is guaranteed that much money, no matter whether he stinks or not. If he suddenly can't throw it in the ocean, and he goes from a 40% three-point shooter to a 15% three-point shooter, he's still getting $200 million. And when the fans stop going, and when the TV revenues dry up, when the contracts are smaller from the advertisers, and the owner is taking it on the chin, the player still gets his money. You can bet 201 with 14 homers and 49 RBIs, even if you signed a contract as a player who hit 291 with 37 homers and 119 RBIs, and you still get the same pay. That is not the case when it comes to the owners. They are at the mercy of their product, not their performance. The players. The players are the ones. They don't even have to perform to get paid. That's why I will never be on the side of that kind of money for the players. The owners take a risk. The players take no risk. The only players who take any kind of a modicum of risk are NFL players whose contracts are not guaranteed. Let's bring Jim Cushlin in. Jim Cushlin, of course, normally with us here at the studio, but he is out at YARC, as you've heard this afternoon, washing cars or selling cars or doing something or another. I don't know. What are you doing out there at YARC, Cush?
I gave somebody a day off to wash, make them all spiffy in the parking lot because it's an absolutely fabulous day, and I didn't mind. It's perfectly nice to be messing with the hose and everything today.
Now, I don't know what the corporate value of YARC Auto is, but if it's really high and you do a really good job, then you deserve a hell of a lot, an astronomical amount of money, because the owner is making a lot of money. You realize that, right?
I do, and maybe I'll be talking to some people after I'm done here with you in a few.
I mean, that's how silly it is. I mean, honestly. I mean, you know, there might be a tremendous car designer, you know, working for Chrysler Jeep, and they might make some tremendous improvements to the Jeep, and it might make the company a ton of money. But that money, that profit, 90, you know, I don't want to put a percentage on it, but the vast majority of that is going to the corporate owners, to the stockholders, not to the employee himself. If you are an employee and you're doing a great job for your company, you'll be rewarded maybe with a raise and a handsome salary, but you're never going to make anywhere close to what the owner makes, and you don't deserve to simply because the owner starts making a ton more money. And that's where we are at this. That LeBron tweet, and I didn't talk about it last week, and obviously we didn't have a live show yesterday or Monday, Jim, but I've been sitting on this since the 1st of July when Steph got his 40 million dollar per year contract extension, 5 years and 200 mil, and LeBron said he should get 400 mil, not 200, which would of course then come out to over 50. No, wait a minute. Hold on. What's my math? $80 million per year. That's what LeBron thinks Steph Curry should get because the owner of the Kings, the franchise or Kings. Excuse me, I don't know why I went to Sacramento from Golden State. They're both in the northern part of California. But the owner of the Warriors, Leka, you know, his franchise value grew to $2.5 billion.
You know, and thinking about this one, too, and I'm not even sure I'd qualify LeBron as being quote-unquote correct, but the only thing he's in the ballpark on in his comment is, if this was if NBA was structured like Major League Baseball, then, yeah, that may have actually been Steph Curry's contract. It's entirely possible, but it's the NBA and the headache-inducing CBA for how all that works. That's what he gets.
Let me ask you a question. Have you looked at Major League Baseball's attendance figures lately?
Not fully. As a Cleveland guy like you, I'm happy to say that we haven't had to have the low attendance at Indians games discussion this year. But
yeah, that's true.
But other than that, no.
Yeah, the Indians' attendance is actually up. Well, no, it's not even toward the middle of the pack. I take that back. For a first-place team and a defending American League champion team, Jim, they're still woefully inadequate. The Indians threw 40 home dates thus far, and I'm looking at the 2017 MLB attendance report right now. They are, out of 30 major league teams, 26th in attendance, an average of 22,889 per game. Now, is that an improvement over the 16,000 or 17,000 they've averaged over the last few years? Yes. Is it enough? No. But that's not the point. The reason I ask you if you had seen the attendance lately is the number 28th out of 30. That means only two teams are drawing fewer players to the ballpark, or fans, excuse me, to the ballpark. I'm going to tell you about a player in a second. The team that's 28th with only two worst, the two worst, by the way, are Tampa Bay and Oakland.
That doesn't surprise me at all. Okay.
Tampa Bay, the worst at 14,900 a game. Oakland at 18,600 a game. Would you care to guess who the 28th team is, just barely in, on top of those, Jim Cushlin?
Venturing a guess, because it's not, you said Indians were 27.
Indians were 20, yeah, 27.
Marlins.
No, 26, I'm sorry. Indians are 26. The White Sox are 27.
Okay, and so you're asking number 28?
28, yes.
My initial guess that feels wrong is going to be the Marlins.
You're absolutely correct. It is the Marlins.
Wow.
Now, why did I bring this up? Why do you think I brought this up?
All-Star game is there a week from tomorrow.
No, that's not why.
Okay.
The Miami Marlins, just 2 years ago, gave the richest contract in the history of the sport to Giancarlo Stanton. $325 million. $325 million. He's hitting .265. He's got 21 home runs in 50 RBIs. Solid. Solid numbers. Spectacular? No. Triple crown worthy? Please. Solid. That's it. He is on has a contract right now paying him a grand value of $325 million. And what, Jim, are the Marlins getting for that investment? They're 28th in attendance. They're drawing 20,000 people to the ball yard, for crying out loud, to watch Giancarlo Stanton lead the Marlins to their fourth place a spot right now in the National League East at 37-45. Do you see what I'm saying? When owners guarantee this kind of money, whether it's baseball, where there's no salary cap, or basketball, the player doesn't have to take any risk, and he doesn't even have to produce, either at the plate or, in Steph Curry's case, on the court, or in the revenue-driving position of ticket seller. They don't even have to bring people in, and they still get guaranteed the money. The only person who took the risk when Giancarlo Stanton got signed for $325 million was the owner of the Marlins. The only person who took the risk when he bought the Golden State Warriors was Lacob. And now that he's given Curry $200 million, that LeBron wishes was $400 million, again, Curry can go out there and just stink on ice. He can go out there and see a scoring average drop from 23 a game to 13 a game, and the checks will not stop. And that's why I will never be okay with this. Well, there should not be a cap. We should be able to make as much as we want. It should be relative to how much the owners are making. Well, again, how much is the owner making in Miami with the 28th highest attendance out of 30 teams and paying Giancarlo Stanton $325 million?
And in a way, in what you're saying there, there's also one aspect that you didn't touch on, which is, now that I think about it for a second, maybe the trickiest one to do. When it comes to sports, and I'm saying it like that because it doesn't matter if we're talking basketball or baseball or even football, whatever. And I don't know how you fix this kind of mindset, because this mindset has been in existence, you know, forever, even before the days of free agency in the sports. Your pay is based on stuff you've already done, not necessarily what you're projected to do in the future. Giancarlo Stanton, for better or worse, he's making that because he's had much better numbers than the ones that you threw out there for his 2017 season, a couple of other All-Star appearances in his past, and that's what he's paid for. And that, it's always been a little more stark in baseball.
I mean, you're 100% right about that.
I don't know how you break that mindset.
Well, you know, but let's even talk about that. If he's being paid not for his potential in the future, which I might disagree with you on him, by the way, because he's 27 and he signed this deal 2 years ago when he was 25.
Right.
And I think it's more on the ceiling and what he can do based on these career seasons thus far. Rookie year of 2010, 22 home runs, 59 RBIs, .259.
Okay.
Next year, 34-87, .262. Next year, 37, that's his career high, 86, batted .290. 24, 62, and .249 in 2013. Then 37, tied the career high, a career high in the RBIs of .105, .288. then dropped to 27-67, 265. Last year, 27-74 and 240, for crying out loud. I mean, that's a six-hitter. That's a six-hitter in most lineups. And he was getting paid, you know, again, he was in the middle of that three, or at the beginning stages of that $325 million contract. And now this year, obviously a much better start since he only had 27 all of last year, and now he's got 21 this season.
Yep.
And 50 RBIs at 265. He's off to, you know, to a great start.
Yeah.
If he has a second half that's similar, maybe he'll beat his career high of 37. But Jim,
right,
he didn't get paid for what he had done at that point. I think at 25, it's for what he's going to do in the future, the ceiling that his age and production projects him to do, and he hadn't done it, at least in the last couple of years. He has not done it, and yet he's never going to have to worry about one of those checks bouncing. He's never going to have to worry about the owner saying, you know what, it's not working out the way we had hoped, we're going to cancel this. It's guaranteed. The only person who isn't guaranteed the return on the investment is the owner. And that's why I'll always disagree with Maniloff on this owner versus player argument.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, throwing this out there, he did have some injuries the last couple of years. In 2015, he only played 74 games, you know, for example.
Correct.
But you know, it's definitely an interesting
topic. But his career high, though, when fully healthy, his career high is still, it's 37.
Right.
And he's done it twice. And while that's nothing to sneeze at all, I mean, don't get me wrong.
And one of those 37 in 2014 led his league in homers.
Yeah, $325 million. I mean, that kind of money should be reserved for, if it's given to anybody, and I don't think it should be. But if it's given to anybody, it's got to be the guy that as you said before, has already done it, which is kind of what warrants it. And the fact that he has done it consistently enough that gives you a belief that he will continue to do it into the future. A guy like Clayton Kershaw, who I heard them talking about this morning on Mike and Mike. Clayton Kershaw has quietly, and I think that's really true, quietly put together the best five-year stretch in the history of Major League Baseball. In the last 5 years, since the 2011 season, Clayton Kershaw's combined ERA is 1.93. No one has ever had a better five-year run. Not Bob Gibson, not Cy Young himself, not Nolan Ryan, not Koufax. Not Sandy Koufax, not Bob Feller, just go through the list. Nobody has ever done this before. So to me, if he's still young, and he is, and he has done that, and he's proving that he'll do that year in and year out, maybe that's a guy you want to blow it open on. Maybe. But even then, if he blows an arm out, or if he just, you know, can't find the command like he always has had or whatever, and suddenly he becomes a 2.93 or a 3.53 ERA pitcher, the checks are still going to be clearing at the 1.93 ERA rate. And that is, again, where the owner has all of the risk and the player has none. They have the guarantees. And that's, you know, that's the problem.
No, and again, I'm not sure, you know, how you that mindset, you know, can be changed in a way, because again, to a degree, a lot of it is, and there is some about the projection, like in Giancarlo Stanton's specific case, in baseball, it's very stark. 27 is like, you know, supposed to be, age-wise, is one of your peak years in your prime. You mentioned he signed the contract when he's 25, he's now 27. So that's part of it, but I don't know how a mindset gets, that mindset when you're in negotiations between players / agents and owners and GMs, I'm not sure how you go about changing that, because, you know, you have a guy that has hit 35 homers for four years in a row, and he's up for contract. Well, he and his agent are going to say, hey, look, I've hit 35 homers for you for four straight years. I want to get paid now. I mean, yeah. I don't know how you fix that.
The only way you fix it is collusion, and that's not legal. You know, I mean, truly,
baseball
for all
the tried that
to
in
the
say, 80s. We found out what happened there.
Right. You know, for the owners to get together and say, guys, this is unsustainable. You know, and particularly, you know, back then it was, you know, George Steinbrenner and his his money-making machine that was the Yankees. I mean, it was a printing press, for crying out loud. You know, he's not going to come to an agreement with the Oakland A's, who are paying, you know, $50 million in salaries, you know, while the Yankees are spending $200 million, and say, yeah, mm-hmm, I agree. We won't. None of us will offer anybody over this amount of money. You're not going to do that anyway. Even if they would do that, it's illegal, as you point out. So what has to happen is kind of what Maniloff said. The fans need to say enough is enough. And the problem,
I don't think,
is,
that's going to work anymore, though.
No, it won't, because I'm looking at social media, and my opinion, Jim, appears to be, at least in the little, you know, casual surfing and browsing I've done, appears to be in the minority on this issue. People are kind of like, D-Man, pay him. He deserves all of that. Look at what they're worth. You know, and again, the greatest employee at GM isn't worth what the owner of GM gets paid. The greatest employee at Microsoft isn't worth what the owner of Microsoft gets paid. It's just silly to make that argument that because an employee is very valuable to an extraordinarily valuable company, that he deserves as much as the owners of the company.
And one more wrinkle real quick to it. What I just said is about how that's not necessarily going to work anymore. The fans should just stop going. That's an argument you grew up with, I grew up with, but in the age where the majority of teams' revenue comes from TV deals and things like that, the old, well, fans should just stop going to the stadium, arena, or ballpark, that's not going to work the way it might have 20, 25 years ago.
Yeah, that's true. That means they have to stop watching TV, too, and that is a lot to expect. You're right.
And no matter what you read on those attendance figures, if you find the numbers, and I'll have to start digging up for these, maybe do a show on this or something, but I know the TV ratings in individual markets and nationally keep steadily going up every year, whereas attendance is either or down. But the TV figures go up, and if the main revenue stream, as it kind of is nowadays, is the TV revenue and not necessarily the gate ticket sales at the ballpark, well, now you're playing with different things. It's not as easy as 25 years ago where it's like, stop going to the gate.
I'll tell you what, I am a tiny, tiny little cog in the massive wheel that is the sports media.
Mm-hmm.
But I will do my part, honestly, to encourage just that. To encourage, I mean, if you are I don't know if outrage is the right word. That's a little extreme. I'm outraged that North Korea fired an intercontinental ballistic missile, and nobody has done anything about it. That outrages me.
Right.
If you are as put off, I'll do that.
That's a better term. I like that.
By what Steph Curry just got. By what Gordon Hayward just got. By what Otto Porter just got. By what Timofey Mozgov just got last year. By what Mike Conley got last year. These average NBA players, average, except for Curry, he's an all-star and one of the probably 10 best. These average players getting this, if you're as put off by it as I am, and you are willing to say, I can't afford those NBA ticket prices to pay for these guys, and you're not going to the games, stand with me and don't watch them.
Yeah.
Don't watch them on TV. I will tell you this, Jim. I have been so put off by the NBA for the last calendar year for a number of other reasons. A lot of it what comes out of the mouth of the commissioner, Adam Silver. I have found myself watching less and less. I will watch the highlight programs. I'll watch ESPN SportsCenter, or I'll watch some of the other ones, and I'll see what I missed because, obviously, I talk about these games for a living. And in the playoffs, I watch more because now I'm talking about a championship, and particularly when my team, my hometown team, my hometown favorite team growing up as a child is in the finals for the third year in a row. You know, you and I are going to watch this for the most part. But I have, by and large, you know, even if it's a great game on, if it's Spurs and, and Warriors or Clippers and Rockets, and it's got some of the star power in the league against one another, whereas in previous years I'm there. I'm not watching, and the main reason is I don't want to be responsible for the growth of the ratings and the growth of the salaries that I object to, especially as, just a blue-collar fan, middle class like so many of us, and some lower middle class in terms of what we're able to make, and we can't even go to these games if we want to.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna contribute to their pocketbooks, and then maybe if the ratings start to slip, maybe if the numbers start to go down and the advertisers say, hey, we're not paying that much for a 30-second spot in these games anymore, not as many people are watching. And suddenly the networks are like, crap, we're not making as much as we were before. We can't pay the league as much when we negotiate the contract for the broadcast rights.
And
suddenly
in the
those
NBA
numbers go down, and then the owners say the numbers went down. Hey, guys, guess what? The pay is going down. Then maybe we'll start to get to some semblance of reality. I know they live and play in a different world than you and I live in, and I know they always will, and they'll always be have, you know, like Floyd Mayweather, they'll have one different car for every city in which they visit that they drive, and there's stuff that we'll never be able to comprehend.
Yeah.
But for me, if we can pare that down just a little bit to some sense of normalcy,
that's a good way to say it. And that's a good way to say it. I reference something as I do every so often from the old Ken Burns baseball series. For so many decades upon decades, literally into the early 80s, the average ball player made seven times the average blue collar's salary. Now it's about 200 times.
Right.
There's the difference. Even in 1900, a baseball player for playing for John McGraw and the New York Giants, his salary would have been about seven times the guy working in the factory somewhere. But now it's just so ridiculous. And specifically on the NBA, some of those contracts you missed, especially the one signed last year, like Mozgov and Connolly, what was, as we know, the prime driver for that? The new TV agreement gave
right.
so much more revenue that the cap made that ridiculous jump, that once in a great while ridiculous jump.
Yep.
And so teams have floors and then the caps and all that, and therefore the money was there, especially last year, that the auto porters, though they don't deserve it, can go out and claim through their agent that this
yep.
is what you guys need to pay me, because somebody in the league will do it.
Somebody else will. If you don't, somebody else will. And you know what? That will never, ever be okay with me. Let's get a quick timeout here. We'll check our bottom of the hour sports center. We'll come right back, talk a little bit more. Get involved. Be a part of the conversation. Does the amount of money being thrown around at average NBA players and the obscene amount being thrown around to even the star like Steph Curry, where LeBron James says, double that and I'll be happy, does this bother you? Or do you not care what they make? You just want to be entertained. 866-240-1065. Hit us up right here on the
ticket.
Rolling back indeed, Jim Cushman is with us. He is out at Yark in between vacuuming out somebody's car, doing the detailing or whatever it is that he's got going on. Daniel Rocker is running the show for us today. Daniel, appreciate that. Great job. Cush, I felt like I had to do this. I did this about a year and a half ago, and I don't know exactly if it was a year and a half ago, but it was another time. Some of the we lost our connection with Cush. We'll have to reestablish that for whatever reason. Let me know when we have that back. Obviously, we're gonna. Well, you know what it is. He was probably vacuuming. That's what it is. vacuuming the inside of somebody's car. But about last time we were talking about the amount of money that some of these guys make, the guaranteed money, particularly as it pertains to the owners and how they. He is back. Okay, Cush is back. Jim, you'll recall this.
Mm-hmm.
Last time we were having a conversation similar to this, and I said, look, I know it's a different world. I know they live in a different kind of existence than we do. And I'm not saying that they have to be equal to us. I'm not saying that an NBA player who brings in millions of dollars for the owner should have to make as much as your average postal carrier. I'm not saying that that an NFL player should make no more money than a line worker at GM or at Chrysler. And I'm not saying that a Major League Baseball player can't make more than a radio producer or a radio talk show host. I'm not saying that at all. They're in a different world. I get that. We're just asking for a little bit of perspective. When they have $200 million coming in, it's just bad form, LeBron. It's bad optics for you to say, should be $400 million. Should be $80 million a year. When 97% of your fans who you expect to buy tickets to your games and to watch you and patronize the advertisers that bring your games to our TV screens, 97% of those people don't make $85,000 a year. And you're talking $80 million a year. Why should there be a limit?
Yeah.
The greed is just beyond the scope of my comprehension. So last time we had this conversation, Jim, I made a point of this, and I played something that I want to play again.
Mm-hmm.
From the movie Swordfish. If
anybody okay.
ever saw Swordfish with John Travolta, did you see it?
It's been a while, but yeah.
Dan Rocker, did you see Swordfish with John Travolta? I want to say it's a late 90s, early 2000s flick. Do you ever see that one? Dan might be answering the phone. Okay. By the way, speaking of the phones, congratulations to Bill Kopanis from Toledo. Bill, congratulations, good sir. You are going to the Marathon Classic with your all-day grounds pass. Can't remember exactly what year it came out, but it was one of those. Halle Berry's in it, who she looks phenomenal in it. But the star is John Travolta, and he plays a character named Gabriel, who essentially is a terrorist, but who is trying to commit terrorist acts for the betterment of the United States. He's terrorizing other people from foreign countries.
Right, right, yeah.
But in the process, he kills Americans and is okay with that for the greater good. If the greater good of the country is served, then he's okay with killing, you know, ordinary people. Anyway, when being described, there was a 50-second clip in that movie where the cop who's trying to catch him asks one of the associates who is working for him what he knows about Gabriel. And when Gabe, when he answers what Gabriel is, it makes me think of Steph Curry, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Giancarlo Stanton. Who's the highest paid NFL player right now? Is it Matt
is
Ryan?
Is that Carr?
Is it? Oh, their Carr just signed.
Is it Carr now?
Right. Yeah, it might
It'll
be.
Soon
right.
be Stafford. Sorry again, Lions fans, soon for that one.
Soon to be Stafford, which that's exactly my point. These guys don't worth, they're not worth this kind of money, but they live in a different world than we do. Who are they? They're like Gabriel from Swordfish.
He exists in a world beyond your world. What we only fantasize, he does. He lives a life where nothing is beyond. But you know what? It's all a facade. For all his charm and charisma, his wealth, his expensive toys, he is a driven, unflinching, calculating machine. Takes what he wants, when he wants, and disappears.
That's how I feel about these guys. They live in a world beyond our world. What we only fantasize about, they do. And it's all a facade for all of their wealth and all of their expensive toys. They're cold and calculating, unflinching machines. They take what they want, and they disappear. That's the 2017 NFL, NBA, MLB, and I don't even know about as much about NHL, athlete. That's reality. They're in a world we can't comprehend. They're in an existence that we only wish we could be a part of. They take what they want, and they disappear. And it doesn't matter if you ever see them again. And as an example, I've given you the names of Swisher. We could go on and on and on with all of the names mm-hmm. of big-name players who have just burned their teams. And it's based on promise. It's based on past production and the hope of future production and so on. They take what they want, and they disappear. And you know what? They're cold. They're calculating. They're unflinching machines about it. Give me my money. It's all that matters. I may or may not stand and cheer and pretend this is all about the team, that this is about competition for me. I may. And for a handful of them, maybe it is. It's about the drive to win. It's about the drive to win a championship for a handful of them. But for the vast majority, cold, calculating, unflinching machines. Pay me. That's it. Carmelo Anthony in New York. Phil Jackson, get out, Carmelo. We can't rebuild around you and your contract. We have so much we need to do, so many young people we need to acquire. We can do it and start it without you if you will agree to a trade. And maybe you would like it better someplace else where you can win a championship. Nope, you owe me $50 million guaranteed. I'm getting every cent. What about winning a championship? I said every gosh blasted cent. Cold, calculating, unflinching machines. It's what they are. Steph Curry got $200 million for 4 years. I'm sorry, for 5 years. That's $40 million a year. LeBron James steps in. He deserves 80. $80 million a year, $400 total for the value for the length of that contract. Why should it be limited? How come he doesn't get more? Cold, calculating, unflinching machines. That's what they are. And my friends, I don't agree, and I don't like it. And when I was a teenager, I might not have cared. In fact, I didn't care when I found out Ricky Henderson was going to make $3 million a year. Oh, my God! I didn't care because I was young. But now, you know, when life starts to smack you in the face as you try to live paycheck to paycheck and you're trying to find out, can I afford to take my kid to the ball game? Can I afford to take my kid to the arena? Can I afford to take my whole family? Hell, I mean, maybe just one of them. Sorry, we're going to have to flip a coin. All right, sons, rock, paper, scissors. Winner goes to the game with me. Loser has to stay home with mom. You know, because we can't afford it all. I have a problem with the swordfish mentality that so many of these guys have. Jim, I'll give you the last word because I know we're
short. And part of my last word, I was doing some quick numbers on that. Remember I said before the break 7 times and now it's more like 200 times? I don't know if this is the quote-unquote average salary, but let's just say $50,000 a year. 7 times that is $350,000. That's, decent money, but not just, you're in a completely different world. 50,000 times 200, that's 10 million.
There you go.
That's it, right there.
And that's 10 million, but Jim, that's 10 million a year.
Right.
But Gordon Hayward is getting 30 million
exactly,
a year.
Exactly, by 200 so that's times 600. Is probably outdated.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It is, by far. And Curry's getting $40 million a year. And after LeBron, after this season, because, of course, he played it the way he did, he'll be available for probably $50 million a year is what somebody will give him next year, whatever the supermax is going to be. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. It's a world we don't understand, but more importantly, it's a world that, quite frankly, I think we are entitled to some extent to resent. And I do. I do. Call me a hater if you want to, but I'm going to go ahead and own it. And I'm going to say, yeah, I hate it. I hate the attitude. It's one thing to take the money and be humble about it and say, oh, my God, I've never, ever imagined this. I feel so unworthy of this. I'm so proud of what I've been able to accomplish. I owe this to my family. I owe this to my teammates. I owe this to the owner. I owe this to the fans. You guys are amazing. This is really quite an honor for me. That would be one way to handle that pay. Another way would be, I deserve more. We deserve more. In fact, double that amount. How come the owner makes so much more than we do? And that, my friends, I will continue to be a hater about. All right, that's it. All the time we've got. Sorry I didn't get to get into a lot of baseball, but we will. There's plenty of time. We're approaching the All-Star break, obviously. Stay where you are, because Drive Time is coming up next right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, we'll see you tomorrow afternoon.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.